Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast, your go-to destination for exhilarating journeys through the triumphs and challenges of extraordinary women, shaping the world in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I am your host, Kelly, and together we will explore the stories of visionary tech CEOs, groundbreaking scientists, and insightful recruiters, and many more women, making this podcast a dynamic showcase of global talent. Join me as we unravel the stories behind their success, offering a first-hand account of their experiences and invaluable advice at every stage of their remarkable career. Get ready for a thrilling exploration of innovation, resilience, and empowerment as we amplify the voices of trailblazing individuals, breaking barriers and building a future where brilliance knows no boundaries. This is the Women in STEM podcast, where inspiration and knowledge collide to propel us forward towards limitless possibilities. So welcome to the Women in STEM podcast. Would you like to please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, Kelly. My name is Shira Kim. I am currently the head of ICT and digitalization at the city of Affoltern am Albis. It's a small city in Zurich, in the canton of Zurich. And it's just, you know, it's been a privilege to go into this job. It's actually my first month in, so I can spill a little bit of tea afterwards, how it is. And currently, I'm also the executive board member of BPW, Business and Professional Women's Association, which is an international women's association, a pretty old one. It's over 90 years old internationally. And it's been one of the first women's organizations that has received consultative status at the UN. So I'm doing a little bit of nonprofit work. I pursue a career in tech. But it hasn't been always that way, but I think we'll come to that later during the interview.
Wow, yeah. That was a very bold beginning. Head of ICT, wow. I'm just so curious to know a bit more about your journey and how you've been like raised and how it was like growing up in Switzerland and how you end up becoming where you are now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the fact that you brought it all back to a personal level. This is a very Swiss thing that got ingrained, I think, into me already to introduce myself with my job instead of who I am as a person. So thanks for bringing it back.
Yeah.
So I'm originally from Korea, but I was born and raised in Switzerland. And it's a little bit of a non-traditional story because my parents were originally, they were musicians, and they came to Switzerland because their LP producer was based in Bern in Switzerland. So this is how they ended up here. I've got two sisters. So I guess when it comes to culture, when it comes to food, I'm definitely Korean. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, habits, rituals, or behavior, probably a little bit more Swiss.
And like with regards to your upbringing, how did that impact your view on like technology? And was it quite like a clear path for you growing?
Absolutely not. No. And I, to be honest, I don't believe anymore in a straight path. I used to when I was young. But for Koreans, you know, very traditional Korean upbringings, this, the path is always very straight. Koreans usually have a clear understanding where they want to be in 30 years from now. You know, if you don't have a doctor or a PhD, it's like you haven't reached your personal goal to reach, you know, excellence in your job or university degree, etc. But my parents weren't like that. I think just because they were already touring around as musicians, they kind of always wanted us to pursue whatever we're passionate for. And because my parents were very much into music, my dad used to produce music at home. So he needed to be, you know, up to date with all the tech, all, you know, from the whole transition from LPs to CDs to MIDI files to MP3, you know, it's been also a technological journey kind of for him. So at home, we had to have a computer, obviously, for him to kind of produce music. So I think it started all from there, that he was very, he had an affinity to technology just because of that. And, you know, I have to blame him buying all these kind of mathematics games for us, obviously, to learn math. But I still remember that game was called Mathe Blaster. It was in German and it was so cool. I loved it. And I guess that was my path into gaming. So really blame my dad for putting me up to this. And yeah, I think if you're into gaming, you easily go down the path of discovering technology, not only from a recreational point of view, but also from a lifestyle point of view, and how you maybe approach problem solving, etc. And the community is very different as well. I am a very extroverted person, so I love socializing in person, but also online.
And with regards to all the skills that you picked up from like gaming, how transferable were these skills? And with regards to you advancing in gaming, did you go to university? Did you do an apprenticeship? Or did you go straight into work? How did that go?
So I actually went straight into work. I went to a so-called economics high school. In German, it's called Wirtschaftsmittelschule. So basically, you remove all the other STEM subject except math. And you just learn economics, basically, or financial economics, financial math, etc. And I ventured that path because I was convinced I'm going to be a CFO at some point in time. But screw that, you know, definitely not down my current trajectory. But I went to like a very straight route into my first job, into an agency in design and communication. But I was doing their financial accounting. And from there, I basically went into a very long tenure at Swiss Re. And I would split it into maybe three parts. One was very dense and very intense period of project management, where I had to take over already project ownership for offshoring and nearshoring projects. And because of that project management skill, I went into data analytics and reporting, where we basically build a state-of-the-art cockpit and dashboard solution for the entire group. You know, back in the days, we didn't have any data scientists. So everything that we did in terms of IT projects in-house, you would have to kind of try and error the whole development. And because it was state of the art, you kind of need to just go with the flow and see where it ends. And I guess looking back to it, you can see maybe a little bit of gaming there, because you want to gamify the entire process with your user audience while testing a whole new technology and ways of working. You want to make it that everyone has fun while doing it. So I was looking after the whole release management of that tool and UAT, so user acceptance testing. So if you approach it in a way of, you know, A/B testing, but with games, people need to have fun. People need to, you know, have that urge to pursue further analysis and want to dig deeper into, you know, the cockpit and dashboard. You have to visualize it in a way that it's appealing to the eye. It's not just numbers, you know, you have to understand how the audience feels about these numbers and where they want to see the trend going. So I guess looking back, I can see some analogy, but I never really pursued this in a very strategic way. I basically just shaped it in a way that how I want to be, how I wanted to be updated or onboarded as a user in the community. So I guess that approach. And then the last position, basically, I was there for 7 years. I was in a team of so-called permanent insiders, and it was in corporate strategy. I was working in Zurich for 5 years, and then 2 years I was in Singapore, just developing a long-term strategy. And there I was actually again reintroduced into the world of tech, because I was responsible to shape the macro trend map of the company. And obviously, technology has been one of the big parts of the mega trends and the trends that will influence the company's strategy going forward. So I guess that's where it became clear to me that there are so many questions around tech that are not necessarily linked to, you know, financial success of a company, but generally how we deal with certain aspects or impact that the introduction of certain tools have into our society.
You just mentioned about the impact that certain tools have, and I definitely feel like we are all severely impacted by technology and we are all consumers of it. So we all have that experience. But I wanted to know if you can elaborate a bit more on your involvement in digital ethics and your current studies in the field, and if you can elaborate on the intersection between technology and ethics, as you know, evolving to the future.
So I did study actually during my work at Swiss Re. I did a part-time study, a bachelor in business administration, but I never believed in like an academic title that I need to gain. I'd rather go down the professional or more practical route of learning by doing. But this was a subject where I felt I need a more philosophical approach, where I need more grounded scientific research basis, because, you know, ethics and morals are they vary from culture to culture. And I wanted to have a very scientific approach into the topic. I actually started to study digital ethics as a so-called certificate of advanced studies. It's not a bachelor, it's not a master. If you do complete three of the certificates, so for example, AI operations is another certificate, or AI leadership, with the three of those, you can get a master's. But I chose specifically that one because I actually attended a hackathon organized by Girls in Tech. And there was the big question mark of how technology, or specifically responsible AI, will have an impact into society. And if we don't take care of it now, that it will get out of hand. And so I found it a very compelling, first of all, the speakers were compelling, but also the conversations I had with one specific person, actually, I recall from Thomson Reuters, who is looking after data ethics in-house. And she does it professionally. So I understood this is actually something that will also help me pursue my career in ICT or tech industry. When I started to study last year, I basically just did it because I was interested. And so I wrote a paper on the ethical debate of AI voice tech in the gaming industry. So very close to my heart, because one of the issues, or maybe, I mean, it's always a pro and con, gaming, because it's such a recreational topic, people really don't care, you know, in the wider scale of things, people just, you know, say it's gaming, it has no major impact. But first of all, it's a huge industry. Second of all, a lot of data has been always collected in the gaming industry to influence other commercial decisions. And so I just wanted to highlight a little bit of the moral behind maybe more the gaming community, but also the game publishers, which are huge industries that collect currently, I mean, since a couple of years already, for example, Riot Games, a famous game publisher, is already collecting voice data on a regular basis from all their gamers. So one, you know, what I want to make sure is that people, especially parents, are aware of that, because the gamers who might be a little bit at a younger age, I mean, who really reads through terms and conditions, basically just accept and then you enter the game. But there it basically says that they will collect the voice comms and they will use it to train their AI, their voice AI with it. And because voice is a so-called biometric identifier, so it's like very sensitive data, and it is supposed to be protected now with the AI Act in Europe, there is no enforcing it. There is no enforcing this with the companies. So I feel like having an ethical debate is very important. Just to create awareness in the user community, but also with the community who maybe is not involved at all in that scene. And for this year, because I've started to work in government administration, I'm more focusing on the, let's say, the argumentation of ethical legitimacy of using generative AI in government administration. So I'm not sure if you are aware that currently in Switzerland, there is no clear guidance whether government administration should or should not use generative AI tools. The wider population does, and everyone else who has somehow access to it does use it. But there has been an apprehension from the government to really promote this. From a regulatory perspective, is a very, very sensitive topic. So I just want to dive into that deeper and make it a little bit more accessible.
Wow, that is a really interesting topic. And like you said, something very impactful with the rise of AI and us utilizing it. But I'm just going to switch gears. You mentioned in your intro that you're the co-president of the BPW Club Zurich, and I wanted to know a bit more about that. Like, what type of initiatives do you have? What type of projects, and what is this club about?
So, I mean, the ultimate vision of BPW is to enable every woman to have financial independence. So this is a topic that is relevant everywhere in the world and has been actually a big part of the agenda of UN Women. So that's why also we have a consultative status. In fact, we have 5 UN representatives at BPW. So each year we participate in a so-called CSW, the Commission on the Status of Women. It's an event that happens in New York at the UN headquarters, and at the same time, all the NGOs who are somehow involved in the topic will gather as well in New York together to convene and discuss, you know, projects and agendas that need pursuing further. What I did back then in, I believe it was 2022, we organized a so-called parallel event here in Geneva, where we talked about the ethical debate of AI for girls and women. And it was just to, again, create awareness what kind of implications there are. We had 5 speakers, like 5 expert speakers coming in and highlighting some of the difficulties. And that specifically for women, there is a bigger impact because we are, let's say, more systemically discriminated, but in the data sets that have been used to train the AI. So it's not only gender, of course, it's so many different aspects of intersectionality and diversity where we kind of are taking a step back and becoming a little bit more scrutinized, I would say, through the collected data sets, because the historic data sets are determining how a certain AI algorithm is behaving or is being trained, right? The models that we see nowadays, also in ChatGPT or GPT in general, that has been using different data sets. I'll give you an example. Like Wikipedia is one of the key source data sets for these large language models. However, only 18% of biographies are female in Wikipedia. So you basically train the AI with 82% male and 18% female representation of people. Already there, you have an imbalance. And so it's just, you know, these kind of events maybe create a gateway for people who are not familiar at all with tech, are not familiar with AI, which are a little bit, who shy away from this topic because they are not subject matter experts. So we kind of open it up because BPW, we are not a tech bubble. And this is something that I find is very important, that you find a more diverse, a more pluralistic bubble with, you know, amongst women ourselves. I feel like we are sometimes, yeah, we end up in our own bubble and we don't find our way out. And also amongst women, I feel like diversity is so important to embrace and to remain inclusive. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of the future events that we'll have at BPW, just to highlight also the diversity of topics. In May, we have an event in Zurich where we have Julia Panknin, who is very, very well known for her parental burnout story. So she's a burnout survivor, and she is one of those who speaks openly about it in, you know, in papers, in magazines, in news articles like Tagesanzeiger or Alex. So she finds formats where she speaks openly about it. So we invite her over as a speaker. Or we have, again, more from a, let's say, nature-inspired topics where we, you know, go all the way into sustainable finance or just in general, how we deal with sustainability with all the development we have in AI and tech. So we kind of bring it back to a topic that is relatable to everyone.
That is very interesting. And like, where can people find out more about BPW and like, where can people sign up if they want to find out a bit more?
So we have a website on very different levels. So in Europe, we are around 17,000 members. So it's bpw-europe.org. In Switzerland, we are around 2,300 members, and it's bpw.ch. You also find us on Instagram, of course, and LinkedIn. And then specifically Club Zurich, we are only on LinkedIn and we have a website, which is bpw-zurich.ch, or you'll find us again, as I said, on LinkedIn. We're not very present on any other channels because we're fully nonprofit and we wanted to make sure that the channel that we host are well curated. And because our, like, demographic, let's say, distribution of BPW is between 22 until 95. So our oldest member is 95 years old. Wow. And we're very proud of that because it gives you that vast knowledge, but also there are so many intergenerational topics that we need to address that can be covered in this realm in that sense.
And I have another question that I wanted to ask you. I feel like your story is super interesting, and one of my favorite aspects of having a podcast is getting to interview lots of different women and hear their stories and hear how different it can be. I wanted to ask you what advice and practical steps or strategies you would recommend for a woman that wants to get into the tech field.
I would say, so for me, it was really to attend these events by, you know, Girls in Tech, Women Plus Plus, Women in Tech. There are so many, Digital Switzerland, that are very accessible and very low cost. And just to get a sneak peek, get to know the people, get to know the community. But I guess it all starts from reading or listening to podcasts and getting this bite-sized knowledge and nuggets of topics that interest you. And let me just tell you, being in tech, so I'm head of ICT and digitalization. I have nothing to do with coding. I'm not using Python. I don't have to, you know, go down GitHub and search for source codes. This is nothing in my daily work. In my daily work, I have to apply project management. I have to apply more a strategic or tactical toolkit in order to map the world out and see, okay, these are the topics that might be relevant for me and my company for the next 1 to 3 years. What are the midterm steps that I need to take? I have a budget to take care of, and I have to see where do I want to invest? Is it more, you know, into AI tools, or do I just want to make sure that our current operating platform is working just fine? There are so many more operational and more hands-on topics that are, I think, not the image of tech that people have in mind. It's not always, you know, someone in a hoodie who's a programmer sitting in front of the computer. It is a day-to-day job that needs to be done as well. You know, someone who does the project management, who asks the uncomfortable questions in board meetings, who's taking care of, you know, the ethical questions or the moral questions by design. Or if you do a user experience journey, for me, that's so essential to tech. There are so many aspects to that. So I think you kind of need to attend these events to get to know the full spectrum of jobs and opportunities, and just reach out to people on LinkedIn. To be honest, I always or almost always get an answer. If I just, you know, ping someone up and have a question to their post or LinkedIn article, and I say, hey, I read this, can I have you for a virtual coffee? I usually get a yes. So just reach out to people.
And speaking about reaching out to people, how can people reach out to you?
I think, I used to be very social media shy. I didn't have a Facebook account until I had to, from a BPW standpoint. I didn't have a Facebook account until like 2019. So I was a very late user of social media. So for me, I think best to reach me through LinkedIn, because that's the channel I'm really maybe curating a little bit more, where I actually read the messages. Or the very old school route, you know, send me an email. And I usually don't like to I don't like to communicate my other channels like Discord or Instagram because I like to keep that private. Yeah. So best reach me on LinkedIn.
Great. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Are there any last words that you would like to say to the viewers?
No, I mean, thank you for tuning in and thank you for listening to Kelly. I think you are doing a wonderful job. I love your podcast. I love the work that you do, the time you invest to really, you know, get a very diverse group of people to talk on your podcast. So I love the work you do. And definitely, I mean, also follow Kelly. and thank you for your work. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you to the amazing guest host speaker, and thank you for listening to this episode. Please make sure to follow the podcast and to follow me on social media at Kelly_engineer on Twitter or Instagram. As well as please make sure to check out our new YouTube channel called Women in STEM Podcast to see our latest episodes visually. Until next time, bye!